IOX is supported by the following community underwriters: Rockland Cider Works upstate in Gilboa, an agritourism cidery with vacation rentals on a sprawling former dairy farm. Gluten-free hard cider made from 100% New York State apples. New York State produced beer, wine, and spirits. Rockland Cider Works upstate on Stryker Road in Gilboa. RocklandCiderWorks.com. Home Goods of Margaretville, corner of Main and Bridge Streets in Margaretville, New York. Now carrying spices, flour, jams, mustards, coffee and tea, organic vegetables and fruits, and local eggs, milk, cheese, and baked goods. And, of course, cooking basics and tools of the trade for everyone at home. Home Goods of Margaretville. Open every day. 845-586-4177 or hgom.net. Hannah Mountain Resort and Country Club with 29 guest rooms, restaurant, and bar. Specializing in wedding packages, including rehearsal, dinner, ceremony, reception, farewell brunch, and accommodations for guests. And golf memberships are available for Hannah's 18-hole championship golf course. Information at hannahcountryresort.com or 845-586-4849. Peace, love, and yoga in Roxbury for an experience designed to feed the soul, delight the senses, and promote good health. Yoga, meditation, acupuncture, art, music, wellness talks, pain management, nutritional counseling, and fitness plans. Beginners always welcome. Peace, love, and yoga on Hillcrest Drive in Roxbury. Classes and event schedule at 607-326-6333, 607-326-6333, or playcatskills.com.
Hi, I'm John Bernhardt, the host of Tip Off on WIOX Roxbury. Mark Bierman, host of Mark Bierman Sports, and I will be bringing you all the play-by-play action right from courtside as the Delaware League crowns its high school basketball champions. In girls' championship action, the undefeated SK Rams will defend their title once again against Stanford Jefferson. On the boys' side, perennial defending champions, the undefeated SK Rams will take on upset-minded Jefferson Stanford in the nightcap. Will it be another SK double championship night, or will someone rise to the challenge and knock off the Rams? We'll have the answer this Thursday right here on WIOX. Tip-off for the girls' championship game at 5:30, with the boys' title game immediately after. See you courtside.
You're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local, in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable TV Channel 20 on the campus of SUNY Delhi at 107.5 FM, worldwide at wioxradio.org, and on any mobile device FM radio app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight. We have Zane. Zane, how you doing?
Hey.
What have you been up to?
Oh, nothing much. Did some consultations with some new members over the weekend.
Members of Catskill Forest Association?
Yes, sir.
All right. Zane, did you get a chance to drive around and see some tree failures after the ice storm?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a good learning opportunity for a lot of young arborists. It was a disaster zone.
It was terrible. I got around myself, took some pictures, and a lot of trees failed at those tight crotches. Some at the overextended branches, branches just way too long. But, there was a lot of big trees that cracked in half.
Even the ones that didn't crack were interesting. I like to see a lot of the birches. The white birches are common ornamental species, but they can take a pretty good ice load, apparently, without snapping.
Yeah, a lot of maple trees broke.
Hmm.
That I noticed. So
maple and oaks.
Yeah, oaks. There was a white oak. Didn't snap, but, man, I got a picture of it. It's on our website at catskillforest.org, but it's getting ready to,
Yeah,
you could see the slit starting to open up. And when oak comes down, everyone knows about it.
Yeah, days afterward, all I heard was just smashing, breaking, because all that ice was finally melting off those limbs and smashing into the street.
Yeah. Heard a tree come down in the woods, getting something out of my truck. It's dark out, and I can just hear a tree in the distance in the forest, just starting to crack, and then boom, just comes down. Nothing like that sound,
Yeah.
But a lot of weight. It is. It's a good sound.
It's a good sound.
I don't know. It's an interesting sound.
Something's being opened up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of ice. It was. It got really thick once you got to my house in central Ulster County. And then as you push towards the Hudson River in Kingston, it got even a little thicker. The worst area I actually noticed, anecdotally, was Binnawater above Rosendale. There's this one exposed ridge, and there was a lot of damage up there. Man, just everywhere, yeah. But really thick, heavy ice. Terrible.
Yeah. A lot of tree crews working around the clock.
Yeah. But every third Wednesday, we have Mr. Gary Mead, come on, talk about a different forest-related tree. Gary is the owner of Gary Mead Gallery, and tonight's topic is willow.
Willow.
Yeah.
The willows, they bent, but a lot of them didn't break. Willows are kind of like the birches. They're very springly.
Yeah.
And, they have a lot of stretch to them, and... I was telling John and Zane on the way here that what inspired the show tonight is, I don't know if any of you folks are listening that knew old Carl that rode around the reservoir and up and down 28 and 30. And he was a year-round harvester of basket material. He made baskets. I haven't studied it that intensely, but different times of the year, you harvest different species of willows and redbud and stuff like that for weaving baskets. And you can't just go out and cut them. I'm going to make a redbud basket today. But you have to wait for the season. It's like bark peeling. You can't go out and tomorrow and cut a tree down. The bark is going to come off. It's going to be pretty tight.
Yeah.
So, the bark peeling is, basically the best time is the end of March, April, and May, and into June. But you get into July and, it's over.
Yeah, well, for hemlock, it's not bad.
In July?
Yeah, right up to August, really.
Yeah, actually, that's true. I was peeling bark for my siding for my house, the tulip poplars, and they were, it was about the first week in August. I went out and I was following loggers around, and I'll go to the landing, and on Sundays I would peel bark, and we went one Sunday, and it was the first week in August, and I couldn't get the bark off. I mean, it come off, but it was painfully hard to get it off.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be loose somewhere, and then it'd be so tight in another spot. But, you know, I found May and June were probably the, and actually,
I agree,
right up until the first, second week of July.
Yeah.
But after that, it starts staying. But, you know, it's the same thing with buds. But, you know, I dreamt of this guy, Carl. I had two dreams about him one night. And it was, he had an old bicycle. It was a single-speed bike, big fat tires. And he had a black beard. And, you know, he was like Hoppy Quick on a bicycle, basically.
Yeah.
But with a black beard. So anyway, we always see him. He had two side baskets on his back wheels and, you know, beside the wheel. And they were always full of, he'd gather up this, you know, 5-6 foot lengths and tie them together. And then he'd, you know, loop them around, tie them in the middle. So it kind of looked like an arbor going down the road whenever you seen him. But he traveled around for years, and he used to sell most of his baskets over there in Andy's on the porch of, I forget the name of that shop over there, but I have a couple of his baskets, and, you know, I know a lot of people in the area. They just, I mean, he was retired. I wish to this day I would have, you know, went and sat with him in his shop for a while and just learned a little more about, you know, but, you know, this is, I think he passed away at least 20, 25 years ago. So, you know, when, as a young man, I didn't really have time to sit around a lot, chit-chatting with folks. I'm to that point now, so I think that's basically why maybe Carl came back into my life and reminded me of, huh, you know, how important it is to keep track of what has been, you know, behind us now, basically. And I'm sure other people are making baskets and doing all that stuff, but I haven't seen anybody around here doing it that much. But it's a,
so it, you'd make baskets out of willow?
You make baskets out of willow. Actually, the willow that grows along the streams, he never harvested anything over 3/8 to a half an inch thick. Most of all the stuff he cut was, you know, 1/4 to 3/8. And it was very bendable. And, you know, different times of the year, like this time of year, if the baskets he weaved, the bark would stay on. So
maybe. Would he make them out of fresh cuttings he made, or would he
fresh cuttings
soak them a little and then
weave
them?
Well, like I say, I never sat down and talked with him, but all I know is I was talking to Joe Hewitt one time. Joe did sit down and talk with him for a bit, and he said, you know, different times of the year you do different times of stuff, and you pick it when it's the most bendable. And if you study it, you can figure all that out. So, anyway, the willows, I know that willow this time of the year was being harvested because it was, the bark would stay on it. If you harvest it in the spring, the bark would peel. So instead of, you know, harvesting 1/4 inch to 3/8, he would 3/8 to 1/2 inch. And when the bark come off, it'd be 1/4 to 3/8 in diameter, basically. And because that would make a white basket. But if you wanted the color of the, you know, the bark, he harvested stuff this time of year. But the red baskets were amazing. The red bud, and they grow along swamps and that. And
what do you mean by red bud?
it's, well, we call it red, but it, when you go, actually, the when you travel by waterways and swamps, the place I've seen the most of it growing is out on 30.
It must be cut down by dogwood, then.
That's what I was thinking.
It's probably dogwood.
Red stem dogwood.
Yeah. Because we always called it we always called it redbud. We weren't educated scholars from any university.
Well,
it probably did doesn't make it wrong or right.
No,
it's a different common name.
It is, and it's like, you know, I mean, that's my whole life. I was taught by, you know, all the old timers, and you know, we didn't know the Latin name of anything. And it didn't matter in our life. We knew where to go get it and what time of year to get it and how to process it. And because we didn't know the big long term that, you know, distinguished it from, you know, basically rednecks to very well-educated folk. But anyway, it's it all worked out in the same it's the same difference.
I'm just trying to figure out what it is, that's all.
But dogwood is I think it is a dogwood.
Yeah.
Basically, we have a down in the by my mill, I have 3.5 acres of wetland down there, and swamp elm, Howard Fairburn calls it swamp elm. It's got a very dark, almost a black bark, and it grows in clumps. It grows like, you know, a cluster birch, but it's all black, and that stuff, I mean, it entangles. And I know Carl harvested that for his baskets, but he had baskets that were red, he had baskets that were, you know, when the bark comes off, they were almost snow white, but then they'd amber up over, you know, with oxidation. He had baskets that were black, and then he'd take the red and the black and the white, and he'd mix them all together and you know, do like a pattern. Mm. And he was a heck of a basket weaver. But anyway, I have a couple of baskets of his, and you know, I'm holding on them forever now. But you know, back when he was riding around, it was always, you know, we'd see him along the road and toot to him. But he, well, there's got to be a, I went online over the past week and I was, you know, studying about willow and trying to learn a little more about it. And you know, I found 15 to 25 different varieties, but now, you know, we're sitting out before the show and you guys are telling me, oh, there's 100 or so. There's, I mean, in some of the willow, you wouldn't never think it was a willow. They grow along in the rocks next to the stream bed, and
yeah, they definitely like the wetter areas.
Yeah, definitely, willow likes wet.
Species you want to plant in poorly drained areas.
Yep.
But definitely not too close to any kind of a septic tank or drainage pipe, because they will grow roots up in there.
Yeah, and if you look at a white weeping willow, I mean, people just love the look of them, and they're, you know, one of the, that's when you say willow, that's what 90% of the people, boom, weeping willow.
That's what you see in next to ponds in movies.
Yep.
That's the classic ornamental willow.
And, you know, like this storm, if a branch broke off, that ice storm, and if the cambrium stuck into the ground, it grows another tree.
Yeah.
I mean, and if they tip over, all the limbs that hit the ground start new trees. And it ends up, you know, in Missouri, I went to Missouri, you know, 10, 12 years ago, and went along this river and whatever, and I mean, for hundreds of years, willows have been growing there, and they fall down, and you know, it's like the stump is maybe 20 yards down the river, and you know, because of the waterway kind of does something to the, you know, weakens the roots, pulls the dirt around, and they tip and they keep falling. but they just keep growing. They don't die. They just it's just, you know, some of these trees are 200, 250 feet in length. And when they tipped over, they would just grow more sprouts and grow out at the same time. And because before I went, a friend of mine, well, he was a good friend, and he was basically him and my, his mother and my mother grew up together, and we weren't cousins, but we called her my aunt, and he was my cousin, but. Anyway, he lived in Missouri for a while, and he did. He loved fishing game, and you know, he went to college and got his master's and whatever culture that is, and you know, he studied fish his whole life and stream banks, and you know, and he lived in Florida for a while down the Keys, and he was he did a lot of work on stuff down there, but. Anyway, the willows in Missouri were just actually the biggest, longest willows I ever seen in my life. And if you go out and break a willow branch, you can tie it in a knot. And probably this time of year, the bark is pretty well stuck fast. But if you tie it really tight, I think the bark might split. But if you're weaving a basket that's 12 inches in diameter, 10 inches, or I think even 8 inches, because, you know, all the designs he had were just amazing. And, you know, he had at least 100, 150 different designs with his baskets and different weaving techniques. And, you know, some of them he just wrapped in a circle and he, you know, every other row he would take another piece of whatever he harvested to tie them together like a string. You know, he's like, these things were sewed with wood. And
how much you sell them for? Do you remember?
I think I bought the baskets. I bought them off the porch over there in Andy's. And I stopped one day and, you know, the porch was full of them over there. That's all he did in his later years. And you know, I think he did it for like 15 years, and after he retired, I don't really know. I never investigated him that much. I'd like to go sit down with Joe and bring up a bottle of dandelion wine, get some of this stuff, you know, this history that went by that about Carl, because he, you know, I know I talked to him, and he's the one that told me that, you know, he's such an ingenious man with this, you know, what he knows about the environment and when to take stuff and, you know, how to, you know, peel it and bend it and sew it. And it was just amazing. And, you know, they even had legs under him that when he started, he'd do the bottom. And then, you know, he didn't have a pattern, but he'd make them like vases and, you know, you couldn't put water in them, of course, but, you know, you could put, dried flowers and stuff in them for those things. But most of them were meant for fruit. And he'd bend a 3/4-inch stick and wrap it with something, 3/16.
Was he from Andes, or where was he from, this guy?
He lived in the Bark Boom, so that's all I know about him. Hmm. I think he might have lived up Mud Road or Mud Pond or something like that. But
I Mary never Smith? Went. Mary Smith? No.
No, it was Mud something or other. It was on the, you know, on the backside of the reservoir where the junkyard used to be. I think he was up that road. But he might have even, he just lived in an old shack there. And
there's a guy who came over my house not too long ago, and he says the problem with today is, it reminds me of this, like, guys like Carl is just not as many characters as there used to be, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I remember growing up, there was a guy, we used to call him Bojangles, used to ride his bike around New Paltz on a trike and just collect random metal objects.
Yeah.
Then there was another guy, he used to dress all in a USA outfit. And run all the way from the village of New Paltz all the way up the mountain, up Mohonk.
Yep.
And just be a punch in the air, you know? Like he was Rocky. It was awesome. And we'd be on the school bus, see a school bus go by, and he probably just saw all these faces just pressed up to the glass like, there he is again.
Yeah.
But as a kid, your routines cross. You know, you see each other over and over again. You start to see that guy as, that's an interesting guy. I see that guy around town before.
I go to New Paltz all the time, even now, and I don't see those kind of people.
No.
They don't exist.
Yeah.
I almost think, I don't know if it's from homogenous education, but we've lost some of these characters that they make life a lot more interesting.
Well,
I think
a lot of it is to do with the cost of living.
And, yeah.
You know, hell, back then you could, this guy made a living on, $6.50 baskets that, how many could he sell? 200,
right.
500 a year, whatever.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But he's living high. And his electric bill was $6 a month. His, insurance, he didn't need insurance. He'd ride a bike.
Right.
The bike, somebody probably donated it to him.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have that much anymore. And it's become a very fast-paced, expensive world that we're living in. And it's really, I'll say this, I've said this for years, that, when I was growing up, life was hard physically. Now it's tough mentally, which is, keeps a lot more people at bay because, I'm 67, I've never been so damn confused about what's going on in my entire life. And it's hard to understand, it's hard to get a grip on it, and things just keep going up, and that's a recipe for disaster. I also think
people are pressured to think alike today, more so. I don't know. I remember talking to this one guy, Lloyd Greer, in Pine Bush, and he would just talk to us for hours about hunting coons up in the Shangham Ridge.
Yeah.
It was awesome. There's just not as many guys like him out there anymore.
No, I was raised with coon hunters, and we'd finish milking 9 o'clock, 9:30 at night, and my dad would shake us about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. We'd hunt coon till about 4:30 in the morning, and it was a whole nother world back there, but.
To what you were saying, Ryan, I think it's those characters, the ones that are good storytellers.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people today either don't have those interesting stories anymore or they're just not good storytellers.
And you got to risk in order to have a good story to tell.
Yeah, I know.
You
got to fall out of a tree or
something.
You got
to have some high stakes somewhere.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You can't get it by just, surfing the web. That doesn't make a good storyteller, apparently.
But, when I first started my Fruitful Furnishings, this is a story about Willow. I went to, I didn't have a sawmill yet or anything. I was just doing cabinet work and refinishing and custom building. And a friend of mine, Dave Conliff, he still lives in Roxbury over here. But anyway, he had a house up in Dry Brook, and he said, come to me one day. He said, geez, and we didn't have any money back then. Good grief. And so anyway, he said, I want to build a raised panel, on both sides of my staircase in my house. So I went to Fairburns, and he had... Well, it was pallet, but Dick, the one thing about Dick is he cut everything and he would manufacture it into pallet. Didn't matter if it was willow or creek pop, whatever it was, but he had this pack sitting there, and he said it was 1,000 board feet, and he said, I got to get $50 for it, and I went and told Dave, and we split it. So with $25, we each got 500 board foot of willow. And I just used it for, trim and whatever. But the thing with willow lumber is it's cranky. Because it grows in such a wet area, it doesn't really appreciate being dry. So, you know, I didn't have a kiln. We air dried it, put fans on it. I investigated drying wood. So what we did is I had a wood stove in a 8x10 room. It was a giant thing. And it was one of those barrel stoves from somebody, or actually the farm basement. But I put pieces of wire coming down with boards going across, and the doorway going into the wood stove room, you know, I had a little box fan in there that blew heat out into the shop, and that's what heated my shop. But when we were kiln drying lumber, we took these boards, we tie them up with wire, and then we'd lay the boards on top, and then we had a piece of plywood that closed that door, and we could get it up to 200 degrees in there. It was amazing. But anyway, we built this whole, there were, I think, 13 steps. That's mostly what every staircase is, from one floor to the next, including the top landing. And you know, we went both sides, and we did this willow raised panel, and it come out so beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous. And when we finished it, and, we did the stile and rail, and everything was integrated and just beautiful. And, you know, I remember going up there, and, you know, we'd hang out, he had kids, I had kids, and his wife and my wife would take the kids and go up, and we just were down in the basement, and we worked on this willow wall for about 2 or 3 months, and you know, we built sections at a time, went up and installed it, and it was the only thing that, you know, I've done stuff out of willow. You know, I think what I used most of my willow for was, you know, people wanted baseboards for their house or whatever, because you can color it anything you want. You can put black walnut on it, looks like walnut. You put cherry on it, looks like cherry. The grain is so similar to everything. Mm. It's just a, but it doesn't like being really dry. So we put an oil, you know, when we made the panels and the stiles and rails, and we had it all glued up, and then we put the panels in the back and, you know, put screws on a little angle to hold them in. But we sealed that with an oil, which is kept the wood, it made the wood think it was wet constantly, so it didn't get so cranky and start twisting and warping. But coming out of the wood stove room, I mean, I think we just let it get a little bit too hot in there. Because my kiln, the hottest we go in my kiln is 165. And, you know, I had a thermostat in that wood stove where we were drying. You know, I pulled the panel off one day, and I walk in there with Dave. We got a bunch of wood hanging up, and you know, some of it looked like pretzels, and it was twisted and whatever. So I said, you know what, Dave? This wood likes moisture, so I think it was in the winter. So what I did is I took it out, and because we had collapse the cells, and hardwood have cells, softwoods have fibers, but anyway, that's a whole nother issue. But what we did is we collapsed the cells in this stuff, so what we had now is we had kiln dried wood, but it was a little cranky. So it was in the winter, and we took that whole batch that we built his stairway out of, those two walls on up a stairway. We took it out, and we threw it and covered it with snow. And we let it sit there for, I don't know, 2 or 3 days. And we had a day kind of like today where it was felt a little bit warm out. And we went and pulled it out of the snow. We put it back, and this stuff flattened back out.
Really?
It was like...
That's amazing.
It was happy. I mean, it was just too... We got it too hot. So what we did then is we put it in Dave's basement. We stickered it, and, you know, we put it in the house temperature. We let it sit there for about a week and a half with fans blowing on it, and, you know, 65, 70 degree temperature. And we put a lot of weight on it when it was re-drying, because some of them were still a little bit, I call it cranky, but they were twisted. But when they finished drying and the moisture came out, they stayed pretty flat. And then cutting them into shorter lengths helped a lot, too. Because the raised panels, I think the longest, the biggest panel was maybe 2 foot. You know, they were about 2 foot by 2 foot. And when we originally made the design, we were going to go, well, he did a 4 foot panel on an angle that went all the way up on both sides of the stairs. And I said, Dave, you know, instead of going 4 foot, why don't we make two foot sections with a wide, you know, 6 inch. We put a 6 inch style in the middle and on both sides. So now we're dealing with a lot less width because the more you cut lumber up, the less movement, because you're taking the tension out of it.
Right.
And but, you know, we stained this a golden oak, and I mean, that stuff come out beautiful. But the thing about staining, especially willow and pine are really tough to stain, because, you know, if you're working with wood and you want to figure stuff out, do a sample on the side if you're not exactly, if you haven't done it for years. And so what we did is we took the golden oak stain and we put it on the raw wood, and it looked like crap. I mean, it just, it's like pine. It's open and closed, and, you know, it gets dark and light, and you know, some of the wood didn't soak it up. So we took this Danish oil, we put that on first, and then we put our stain on it, and the oil, like, made everything nice and happy. And then when we put the stain on, it stained evenly. And when we got done, it looked like an oak wall. Anybody that went into that house and saw that stairway, they, oh, my God.
Have you been back there since?
Beautiful oak. I haven't been back. Well, he's not. That was, Jesus, I think 40 years ago now. And no, I haven't been.
Be interesting, know, to see how it held up.
I was with him all the while you know, he lived there. But then he bought a house down closer to, you know, to 28, and he moved out of the house, and we never went back up. But yeah. I think, I'm trying to think who owned it, the Pritchetts maybe or somebody, but I remember who he, you know, 40 years ago, I don't remember all the details at this point.
Yeah.
It's been so long. But
I just wonder how it looks like now, if it's
he lived there.
There
for 5-7 years, and, you know, it was beautiful all that time. But, you know, I'm hoping it's still in the house, and you know, I don't think those people would actually realize that it was willow, because it looked like oak.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful job. But that was the only big job I ever did out of the willow. Most everything else was just baseboard. And you know, the thing about it is you can make it look like any kind of wood if you know how to prepare it proper.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and tonight's topic is willow with Gary Mead.
Lived a while without you, darn near half my life. I no longer see our unborn children, run to you, my unwed wife. But yesterday I had a vision beneath a tree where we once talked, of an old couple burning their love letters so their children won't be shocked. Love calls like the wild birds. It's another day,
A spring wind blew my list of things to do away. My friends are getting older, so I guess I must be too. Without their loving kindness, I don't know what I'd do. Oh, the wine bottle's half empty, the money is all spent, and we're a cross between our parents and hippies in a tent. Love calls like the wild birds. It's another day. A spring wind blew my list of things to do away. In a mucked up lovely river, I cast my little fly. I look at that river and smell it, and it makes me want to cry. Oh, to clean our dirty planet. Now there's a noble wish, and I'm putting my shoulder to the wheel, 'cause I want to catch some fish. Love calls like the wild birds. It's another day. A spring wind blew my list of things to do away. Children go to sleep now, you know it's getting late. I know you don't like to miss nothing, and school ain't that great. Oh, I'll dance with you when you're happy, and hold you when you're sad, and hope you know how glad I am just to be your dad. Love calls like the wild birds. It's another day. A spring wind blew my list of things to do away. Darling, it's been a hard go, but I think we'll be okay. I know I say that all the time, like everything else I say. Oh, I've been gone so often, but every time I miss you, and I don't really know nothing, except I like to kiss you. Love calls like the wild birds. It's another day. A spring wind blew my list of things to do away.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talking about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and Zane. And tonight we're talking to Gary Mead about willow.
Well, willows are, well, like you guys said, there's 100 different varieties. And, you know, if you Google it, and I mean, so much information. That's the one awesome thing about today that we didn't have when I was growing up, that if you have a question, you Google it and the answers are right there. I mean, the learning capability, if you want to, there's so much out there, but it's, you know, when I was investigating willow, it was, I mean, like I said, there were little ground plants. I've seen them all my life, and I never knew they were a willow.
Well, the biggest one is black willow, which you see along the East Branch, Delaware, quite a bit.
Creek popple.
Yeah, or creek popple, but that's the biggest one.
Well, that's what Dick Verbin called it. And, yeah. You know, he saw it everything in his mill. And, That's the old term. But black willow is, I mean, they get up to 50 feet. They don't get much more than that.
Not here. On the Missouri, they might, but not here.
Well, they don't grow. They grow 50 feet long, but they don't grow 50 feet tall.
They look like an old tree, like an old spindly tree, but yeah, they don't live that long. They grow real fast.
70, 80 years.
Yep.
About that. But there's, I don't know, I never really noticed them until I came here to Delaware County. I don't feel like you see as many in the Hudson Valley, but I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I've definitely seen more as I drive out here.
Yeah.
Very, very common.
I feel like you get on the east of High Mountain, you don't find as many black willow, you know?
Yeah. Well, they're good, they hold, their roots are firm and deep, and they're wide, and they're strong, and they'll hold the stream bed together. I mean, the DEP or DEC, whatever the hell they are, they run around planting them all around the edges, streams, keep them from, you know, changing direction. But in my world, that's silly. Let the stream do what it does, and let us go in and dam it up and swim in it and pee in it and whatever it got to. And
well, it do help to stabilize the
holy
stream bank.
Before you get, you know, before it gets to New York City, it goes through all those rusty pipes and there ain't a damn thing in the world's going to change that.
Right.
Anyway, so, you know, I'm going to, you know, anyway, that's my spin on it. Might be wrong, might be right, and it is what it is.
It is what it is. The other tree gets confused with is cottonwood, but cottonwood gets really tall.
And they grow fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I have two at my mill that are, they started maybe 15 years ago, and they got to be, I'll bet they're 40 feet tall already. And it was on a place where they're about 10 feet apart, maybe 12. I never took a tape on them, but they're twins. They grow exactly they are exactly the same. If you took a picture of one and then you took a picture of the other and they weren't both in the same picture, you'd think it was the same exact tree. And then when you take a picture of them together, and I mean, that's why I never cut them. They you know, I brush hog that area about every year. You know, I didn't get to it this year, but usually every year I just brush hog it to keep it down and, you know, keep the grass green so the, you know, the deer and whatnot can feed better, and you know bobcats can see a rabbit or something running across and grab them, the red-tailed hawks and whatever. But anyway, there's a lot of willow down in the swamp at my mill, and there's a lot of, well, the wetland is, it's like my animal sanctuary out there. There's so many different species of animals that live in there. And, you know, I notice this time of year, see, when the snow gets deep and the rabbits can't get to the ground, they'll eat the bark off of, you know, the willow and stuff like that just for survival. I have white rose that grows wild down there at the mill, and you know, I noticed the rabbits are eat the bark off of that in the wintertime when they can't get to the ground to eat. But talking about rabbits, this had nothing to do with willow, but one year I saw bobcat tracks, and I saw a blood stain maybe 50, 70 yards from the mill. And I followed the tracks, and you could see where the bobcat laid down, was chomping down. And then I seen the tracks. They went to my sawdust bin where I blow the sawdust from the mill. And I wondered, what the heck? And so anyway, I seen where there were the sawdust was disturbed. So I started pulling the sawdust back, and that bobcat buried that rest of that rabbit that, you know, he already had enough, and, you know, put that rabbit in there. But see, the reason he did that is because sawdust is a very good insulator, and odor and smell won't come out of it. You know, it blocks heat. It's a heck of an insulator. It's one of the best on the earth, basically. But anyway, so I covered it back up, and you know, the next day I went in there and I could see where he dug it out, and had another meal. But that was the first time I ever saw anything like that. But the ingenuity of that of nature and what it, I mean, this guy didn't go to school for any of this. He just knew it. And, you know, it's in the genes, and you know, that's basically how we were meant to survive. And, you know, anything above and beyond that, I mean, we live for many different reasons now, and you know, living for life itself is probably the most important thing we can do. And, but, you know, willows are a part of it, and willows have been a part of it. And when you, I mean, you can go to, I don't know too many stores, but there's these stores, it's not coming to my mind right now, but Marshalls or something like that, and they have all this stuff that comes out of the Orient and all over the world, and a lot of baskets come from other parts of the world. And, you know, I don't know of anybody else here now that is doing basketry like that. So, I mean, black ash, you know, I had a, like 10, 12 years ago, I had this guy, oh my God, we got to get some black ash, and, you know, one tree's worth like $1,000 or I don't know. He was just going on. He said, you can pound it. You harvest a certain time of year, and you pound it, and it just, the grain just splits into reeds. And you use it for basket weaving. But there's not a lot of black ash.
No.
Around here.
Not here. And, up north, St. Lawrence County.
But it's got the same consistency and you know, versatility that willows have, and all these other type of plants, you know. But the willows are amazing. I have them in New Kingston when I was a kid growing up, the cows and the horses, and you know, we had 200 head of cattle and horses on that property, and you know, we used to be able to walk along the river and go fishing, and you know, the cows have been gone since I think 98 96, maybe 98, and you know, you can't even get near that stream to fish in it anymore. The only way to fish it is to walk down the middle of it, and it doesn't harbor. And you know, with that, the willows grow on both sides of the bank and kind of shadow the stream, and there's not the fish that there used to be.
Why do you think?
I don't think that they have the nourishment that they used to, and you know, there's not much. I mean, even fish need sunlight, and if they're not, you know, there's so many. I mean, they like to hide in dark places, and they like it under rocks, but
yeah.
You know, the East Branch, if you go down there, and you know, I was taught by, well, my dad, fly fishing, one of the best I ever seen. And, you know, we'd hop in the truck after milk and run down to, you know, just at dusk down to the, you know, the East Branch. And we'd get in the river, and he said, if you can see them, they can see you. So we always had a shadow on the stream. And he taught me how to read the river. And, you know, this has something to do with willow, too, because willows hold the bank good. You know, it washes out, and they lean a little, and they cause a shadow on the river, even in the shallower parts. But Dad told me, he said, now, see that willow tree down there? We're going to walk toward that, And, you know, we'd get our waders on. We'd walk down toward it. And he said, just don't get too close. And then he'd go, oh. He always said, hark. And that meant, hark. Be Listen. Still. Hark.
Oh. Hark.
That was a word.
Hark.
Hark.
Mary angels.
Hark. We completely would freeze. And he'd say, there's a big trout there. Can you see him? And I said, no. He said, well, in the shallow water, you know, the ripples go horizontal. When they run over a rock, they run horizontal. But when there's a trout, a big trout there, a fish, they run, you see a vertical wave going over the trout. And he throws line out there, and boom. I mean, it was just amazing. But I have a poem for tonight before we go any further that I wrote this week. We've had a lot of cold mornings this winter. Last year we had a lot of snow. This year we had a lot of... I wrote this actually 1:29 at 11 o'clock in the morning. And I woke up and I had breakfast and I went out and I come back in and I was getting ready to do something and this come to my mind. It's called Freezing Mornings Awaken. Sun coming up over the horizon. Again, temps reading below zero. Winter snow covering the landscape. Splendid warm feelings from within. Underneath the snow, warm, safe. From bitter cold, the air beholds. Birds and animals foraging for food. Nature is providing for each of them. Cracking open a garlic clove from last summer harvest. Opening a jar of canned fruit from the pantry of food and drink. Veggies, pickles, kraut, sauces, juices, ciders. Dried flowers, plants, meats, fruits, and berries. Freezer full of harvested foods preparing during spring, summer, and fall. Canning over a hot summer stove. These well-spent days preparing makes the freezing cold not seem so bad. Winter is a time to rest, reboot. Hard going if you miss the groove. Spirits everywhere for us to choose, knowing when they contact you will determine their trust in you. I may not need to go out today. The fresh air is calling me, though. Gentle footsteps today will be kissing the earth. And that's my poem for the night.
Well, Gary, that's all the time we got. I'm from the forest, and thank you for listening. Tonight's topic was Willow with Gary Mead, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Peace, everybody.
All right.
Good night, everyone.
Have a good night.
The hallway and the bottle was his friend, and the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man his way, his ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay, and he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. On his mantle shining the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name, and then he heard the joyful sound children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town where the river runs down from the forest. With a mighty roar, the big jet soars above the streets, and the con men con, but life goes on for the
city never sleeps, and to an old forgotten soldier the dawn.